Today is a day for truth.
Black and blue, God versus man.
A versus man.
Or Midwest God.
I've been excited before, just because Ben Affleck got picked to do Batman. I'm curious to see how he does.
The stormtroopers used to be bad at shooting, and now they're not. You know, something like that.
Like the CG of Jurassic Park versus the CG of Lost World, because
blah, 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 blah.
Don't get too proud of this technological terror you've constructed.
My whole life has led to this moment. I'm in heaven.
Okay, and welcome back to Four Midwest Guys. And tonight, for the very first time, all four of us are actually here.
Woo!
The three of us in the same place, even. This is crazy. Beyond
nice.
Belief. Beyond belief. And I am B. Willie. I am your host. And with me today is Brian Ankenbauer.
Hello. Hello.
And John Z.
Hello. Poor man Jay-Z here.
Poor man Jay-Z. You're right. My bad.
Salud.
Salud. Salud. And last but not least, he is the antagonist of the show, for Mr. Brian B.
Yep, I'm here.
All right.
Way to sound enthusiastic.
He's here.
Woo!
We weren't sure if he was going to make it tonight, but luckily he's feeling better. So we're glad to have you here, Brian.
I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you, sir. So we're going to move right into the show. We got a lot to talk about tonight. And Brian, I think you've been doing a little bit of research in the old sound effects world, and you've uncovered something kind of interesting. Why don't you tell us about it there?
There's this sound effect that's been used in movies recently over the past couple of, maybe 6 months to a year, I think. I really haven't kept too much track on it. I'm actually on YouTube trying to find the movie clip. So we put together a minute and 42 second clip of all of these movies put together, a lot of these action movies, mind you. That has this really deep, it's like winding down is what it's called.
And it's from Inception.
It's from Inception, but here's the thing. Hollywood has taken that into a life of its own, and it's being used in pretty much all of the big blockbuster movies now in the previews.
Because it's really popular.
I know, but... I know. So if you go onto YouTube and find this, there's actually a full clip, minute 42 second clip that has just all of these different movies. Starts off with Ender's Game, where it's got the big whole winding down sound effect, and then goes into Dread, goes into the Avengers. I'm actually watching the clip with the sound muted right now. Fast and Furious. But it seems like it's the next big thing that Hollywood is using to promote all of their movies. And it's just something that I noticed. Amazing Spider-Man 2. We've got, if you just type in winding down into YouTube, you'll find the minute 42 second clip. It's got that whole Inception sound effect used in every single one of these different trailers from all of these different studios. Just find it interesting that... That's become a new big thing in Hollywood, I guess. I don't know.
So what is it? I mean, what does it sound like? I mean, I'll try to bring up the clip, but what?
It's just this whole big. It's just this big winding down. That's the best way to describe it.
So it's like I liked your version, dude. It was pretty cool. I liked it a lot. That was awesome.
He's hysterically laughing.
I think you tickled Ankenbauer's funny bone with your sound effect.
Okay.
We're so technical.
Wait a minute. I think I got the clip. Hold on. So just for our fans out there.
Now!
So it was that sound effect right there at the beginning that we just heard? That,
yep.
Right?
That big, whole, huge, deep bass sound. And if you watch the whole thing, it's just that's used in every single trailer. And I don't think anybody's caught on to it, but this has only gotten 222,000 views. This was from May 28th of 2015. But all of these different action movies using the same exact winding down sound effect. I find it interesting.
Oh, one more time. So this is being used over and over and over again, correct?
Yeah,
so
yeah, pretty much.
It's become like it's the new Wilhelm scream then, right?
Yeah, I guess you could say that, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
So we're looking at what? So it started with Inception, I'm guessing maybe earlier. I'm not sure. No? It's been around a lot longer than that?
I think it may have started around like the mid-2000s. I remember hearing that sound effect.
About mid-2000s? Okay. So yeah. I've never noticed it before until we started talking about it tonight. So this is kind of interesting.
I don't remember where I first heard it.
So it's become a... you know, the new go-to thing.
Actually, I want to say I think it might have started with The Matrix.
Yeah, you might be right. You know,
yeah, that started like way back when. It
or even maybe turned back about the same period. Even the it almost sounds like the Attack of the Clones.
I was going to say the same thing. It sounds like yeah. Oh, the sound effects you hear in that.
Right.
I don't know.
Except about
I mean,
the atomic bomb and the asteroid field.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of got that kind of feel.
You know, you hear a lot of this, a lot of the Star Wars sound effects in a lot of the other movies now too. I've noticed a lot of the like the drones and the vehicles and stuff. You can hear a lot of that in other movies.
Like they're mixing it
yeah.
and stuff like that.
Actually, yeah. I really do think it started with The Matrix because it was the sound effects they used to transition from the real time to bullet time. So it did slow everything down. And that's where
they're like doing the backwards.
So it started like a pow.
Yeah, and you see like the bullets fly in slow motion. Okay.
Cool. So it's been around for like 15 years.
Wow. Man.
But it, like I said, I just noticed it. It seems to be that Hollywood is, you know, the whole machine of Hollywood has now taken it upon themselves to this is the new sound effect that we're using for all of our movie trailers.
Well, also speaking of bullets and bombing and Hollywood, I understand that our latest rendition of Fantastic Four isn't doing so well.
Yeah.
That's kind
yeah,
of evil.
That's well, you know, if you look online, a lot of critics have already trashed it. It had like I think $150 million budget. Only made I think maybe $2.7 million through Thursday night showings. I think it's only made $11 million this weekend.
It had a $27 million weekend, but it still put it behind Mission Impossible, Rogue.
But still, I mean, yeah, just when you have a director who basically went onto Twitter and said, yeah, you know, I had a fantastic vision of this movie a year ago. Did he get the chance to cut it all, or did the studio recut it for him, 20th Century Fox?
I have heard
that
they kind of tore it apart, that this isn't anything near what it was supposed to be, or that the director failed to capture, what's the writer's name? Name escapes me.
Stanley?
Not Stanley. Simon
Kinberg.
Simon Kinberg.
Right. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I mean, we're talking about a sophomore effort from director Josh Trank, who did Chronicle. Anybody see Chronicle from a couple of years ago?
I never did, John.
I did. It was actually really good.
Cool.
I never saw it.
I never saw it. I know I feel a little bit better now that Mr. Trank is no longer involved in the Star Wars standalone movies, I guess, after this.
You're only as good as your next movie. That's the rule of Hollywood.
And maybe that's why he got removed. I don't know. Maybe that's why they sent him
back. Well, let's put it in a little perspective, coming from somebody who was born after the original trilogy was already released. That's just kind of giving you an idea of how young of a director he is.
Right. I'm not trying to take anything away from him. I'm just wondering if the stank of Fantastic Four reboot is made its way to the
it's a fantastic stink.
Yeah, Fantastic Stink made its way. Good call. It's made its way
See,
to
here's
Kathleen
the,
Kennedy.
Here's the funny
Star
thing about it.
Disney.
This is the funny thing about it. Okay, the movie's already tanking at box office, and they've already regardless, because here's how Hollywood is a machine, as I've talked about before, they're already talking about doing a sequel to be released on June 9th of 2017.
Oh, good.
You're not even going to make your box office back from this movie. And I mean, come on.
The beauty of actually setting those kind of dates is that you don't have to. You can say, you know what, we're not going to do it because it didn't do well.
Right. It could also still currently be in development, which in development doesn't mean anything's happening. That just means they announced a date and they can just drop it from there. Which is,
I mean, at this point, if I will say I did see both of the Fantastic Four movies that came out in 2005 and 2007. I thought they were both very well written. I thought they were very well put together, very well done. I mean, hell, at this point, let's just go ahead and throw Roger Corman's 1994 Jay Underwood movie out there of Fantastic Four. That would probably do better than the version that we have in the theater right now.
There was a 1994 version.
Oh, it's embarrassing. It really is. The fact that the name Roger Corman is behind it should tell you exactly what it is.
I don't think it made $27 million at the box office, though.
No, because it was never released.
Oh, see? So it can't be better than what was actually released.
Well, to that Fantastic Four, exactly what they did to this Fantastic Four, which was, we have to release a movie or else we're going to lose our theatrical rights.
Now, see,
and that's the same thing they did to Superman Returns, Man of Steel, and now this Fantastic Four, because they were about to lose their rights. And had they not made a film this year, it would have been a Marvel.
Why do they write contracts like that? Because that's ridiculous. Spit something out
legally,
just to keep the...
Legally, you can only... It doesn't matter if it's movies or employment or anything. It can only last 7 years.
Well, why don't they just lease it for 7 years if they want to make a movie? And they just wanted to have... They wanted to keep the rights.
The rights would have been up after that 7 years, and they had to do something with it because that proved they didn't have anything.
They should buy it on a per movie capita, in my opinion. Or if they say, well, they want to buy three, that's fine. They have... You either make the three in a certain amount of time or...
Well, you get lawyers involved, and that's what happens.
Yeah, something has to be done, because if they're just going to spit out junk movies to keep rights going another 7 years, that's kind of ridiculous in my opinion, but I don't know.
Well, I agree.
So, speaking of the whole comic book world, Mr. John Z, I believe you would like to address the world of comic books and... And about the quality of films that we're getting, maybe?
Where to begin?
And if you are a comic book fan,
kind of going off of what Hershey was saying, the second the movie was announced that there's going to be another Fantastic Four film, I think everybody that knew both movie and comics just kind of looked at each other collectively and went, oh, it's going to be terrible. And I think the 9% on Rotten Tomatoes and that weekend definitely reflects how terrible that movie was. I mean, but the Tim Story movies were they were bad in like a disaster level, but at least with them, they were entertaining to watch the disaster unfold in front of you. With this new one, it's just dull. When I saw the posters, I saw the trailers, you could watch something like Sharknado and appreciate the badness of it because it is having fun with how bad it is. But this one, they're taking themselves too seriously. That's another problem when I hear some kind of change jar right in the back or something.
Oh, that was my cat. It's my cat.
Your cat.
Yeah.
Random kitty.
Yeah. I was going to say, John, I think you and me can agree that this new Fantastic Four is a fantastic flop, for lack of a better term.
We knew it was going to be from day one. That was what I thought, like, the second I heard it was going to be announced. But the state, what I was going to say, like, the state of comics right now, I mean, it just, growing up, reading comics, reading all the Marvel, reading all the DC, and getting into the universes and everything, and just seeing what's going on with the stories, both comic book and film-wise, it's disappointing in a lot of respects, because it's just...
Not living up to your expectations?
Not even that, it's just... there's stuff going on that they're destroying entire characters, like... Fantastic Four, the only reason that was out in theaters was if 20th Century Fox didn't do something with it, they would have lost their, like I was saying before, they would have lost their story rights. It would have default gone to Disney, and Disney's been doing everything they could to try to bury it because they don't own it. Like, they've actually canceled the comics. There's no more Fantastic Four comic books right now because, well, it's also due to, like, really bad sales, but that was just an excuse to cut them.
But they've also pulled the same crap with the X-Men comics, too. Like, and X-Men was my bread and butter growing up. I have the trading cards in my house right now. I can tell you anything about the gold and the blue teams of the 90s and all of that backstory. And to see what they did to Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch was embarrassing. Because, and kids growing up, or future generations that may potentially listen to this for whatever reason, they are the children of Magneto. They will always be the children of Magneto. And that is something that the Avengers movie tried to bury. And they try to say, oh, they're godchildren. Oh, they were rescued from this town or whatever. No, they are the children of Magneto. And that was one of the most interesting aspects, was the fact that one of the X-Men's greatest villains was also, like, his children were on the opposing side of him. And it was some very interesting stories that came from that. And now all of that's been glossed over because of legal issues. Mm. And that's what's been bugging me, is the fact that because the Disney Marvel doesn't have the rights, they're taking stuff like that and destroying it. But incidentally, it ended up with one of the coolest scenes of a movie last year in Days of Future Past, because originally they were going to have the Juggernaut break out Magneto from the Pentagon. But because they found out they didn't have the rights, what they did was they said, okay, well, fine. If Marvel wants to own Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, Quicksilver is now going to be the one to break Magneto out. And that is arguably one of the coolest scenes in a blockbuster last year, was when Quicksilver...
Time in a bottle.
Oh, my God. It's one of the coolest scenes.
I was laughing my butt off. I thought it was hysterical.
And it's an achievement of visual effects that is... I mean, that's... It's the first. It was also the first X-Men movie nominated for an Oscar for effects.
Really?
Yep.
I didn't know that.
And I look at that scene and I was like, that's why. Right there. Because it was beautifully done. But they did it just to spite Disney for the fact that, oh, you want to own our characters? Fine. Here's Quicksilver in our movie. He is the son of Magneto. We don't outright say it, but we hint it. So it's just little things like that. It's fun to catch them, but at the same time, it's like you shouldn't have to think about them, because it's, why are you doing this just because you don't own the rights? Let them exist on their own universe. And it's the same thing that's happening with Spider-Man, too. The reason we're getting another Spider-Man reboot is because Andrew Garfield isn't under contract to Disney to be in the Avengers films, but we see the new Spider-Man that they've cast to be in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, so... That's the only reason that they're rebooting it, is just so they can have something to connect to them. Okay. So it's just, they're doing a lot of stuff to, when Disney first acquired Marvel, I mean, there was a lot of stuff, I mean, it's just like when Disney acquired Lucasfilm, because, well, I mean, frankly, the reins should have been taken away from George Lucas a long time ago, but,
I might have something to say about that, but go ahead.
Okay. But, no, it's just there was the first phase, watching Iron Man, watching Incredible Hulk, watching Captain America, and realizing, wow, they're connecting all the universes together. This is kind of interesting. It's like watching comic book issues being connected in a film world, which is why the first Avengers was something to truly behold, because you've never seen franchises cross over like that before. But... as it goes on, and as we've gotten more and more of the Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff out there, it can really feel oversaturated. That being said, last year produced probably two of Marvel's best movies in Guardians of the Galaxy and Winter Soldier. I mean, I remember watching Birdman last year, and there's this little line where you could tell it was the clear... snob influence, where they're like, oh, there's that credible actor, but now he's doing all those comic book movies. And I just sat there and I went, wait a minute, Winter Soldier has more subtext and depth than your movie does here, Mr. Best Picture winner. So there's a... they still are making some really good movies, but it's just, there's a... when you hear about the legal stuff, when you hear about what they're doing to beloved franchises, and just, there's a lot that just feels like they're just kind of trashing the history of what you've grown up with in comics in a way.
So should Disney protect the Marvel brand a little bit better? Maybe just buy back the rights from other studios so they have complete and full control over their entire character catalog?
Well, and that's the thing. Well, that's another thing, too, is I think as much as I knew Fantastic Four was going to suck, as much as I knew it was going to bomb, the Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, and X-Men are the only standing rebels right now, and those are the movies that needed the most support. They needed the people behind it that loved the stories, that grew up with the stories, that had a passion for telling the stories. You got a little bit of that with Bryan Singer and Matthew Vaughn when they made the X-Men movies, but yeah, what the heck was his last name, or whoever that did Fantastic Four? Was it
Trank?
Josh Trank. Yeah, I don't know if it was a passion project of his, if he grew up reading the comics, but none of that passion came out, clearly. I mean, bad reviews, bad reception. I mean, C- of cinema score reviewers. I mean, the people that went to see the movie, I mean, these aren't critics. These are people that came out of it and were given a poll card, and it got a C-.
I have a hard time believing that Simon Kinberg would have just wrote an absolute turd, in my opinion. I just don't see it. I mean, this guy, he's been doing work on the small screen with Rebels, and Rebels is absolutely fantastic. I keep telling you guys you need to watch it, and I'm not kidding. And I'm not just saying that just from a story perspective.
One of the reviews that I read about Fantastic Four actually said that it was like watching a 100-minute trailer for the movie.
Yeah.
It was that bad.
Just highlights and action.
I think I read that caption under the Rotten Tomato review, too. but no, I mean, on top of that, I mean, even look at what happened to Comic-Con. I mean, comic book conventions, their main thing about them was not the panels, was not the guests, was not any of the hosts. It was, this is a place where we go to trade comics. This is a giant warehouse where you have all these vendors to find rare comics and all that. And, yes, you have your cosplayers. But now you have cosplayers that have a humongous budget that are just – if you've seen, like, just how detailed some of these players get with costuming, it's insane.
It's almost like you're walking off set.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, these are people that are actually crafting things that are multi-million-dollar film-level budget costumes. And at the same time, I mean, the whole thing is now a marketing tool for producing movies or producing TV shows. Like, and it's not even just comic book-based movies. It's genre-based movies. Like, anything that has any kind of genre to it that's outside of film festivals or Oscar bait stuff, which, well, to be fair, that's what film festivals are for, basically their own comic convention for art houses. But you get this... It's just, you feel like it's lost what it was when it first started because there's so much that's being bought out into it. And it just has kind of diluted what it's become.
So should studios start taking greater care because there's enough people to hold them accountable now. There's enough people to say, I don't care if you spend $100 million on this movie. If it doesn't have story, if it doesn't have substance, if it doesn't connect with me some way, somehow, whether, you know, as a fan of the childhood, fan of the comics, whatever, that we're not going to go see it. Because I think there would probably be a lot more people to go see Fantastic Four if people hadn't been ripping it to pieces on the internet.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's really what it needs to be. I mean, there are people, I mean, the movies that have been successful the way they have been with Guardians of the Galaxy, with Batman Begins, I mean, these are established filmmakers that they had some passion, some connection with these stories. Like, Christopher Nolan said, like, one of his favorite characters was Batman for the fact that he's grounded in the psychological universe. And he brought that sense of realism to the Batman universe and created something unique and different. So he brought his own vision to it. And it
was amazing. I mean, it's created this whole universe that we were willing to be a part of. I mean, and then you have something like Guardians of the Galaxy, which, let's face it, how many people actually read the comics of Guardians of the Galaxy until this movie came out? And except the director and writer who knew the source material, it's like, I need to write this. And he wrote it just the right way, and it became the most entertaining movie of last year. Like, it actually, it was one of the rare movies that after its number one debut, it got knocked off, and after a couple of weeks, it went back to number one. There's very, I mean, anybody that watches, like, Weekend Box Office,
there was nothing else out.
Well, and also the Ninja Turtles movie was a complete disappointment.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
that's the Michael Bay for you. So.
Yeah, but on top of that, it was just the movie had such a small percentage every week that it came back to be number one again. I mean, the last movie that did that before that was Skyfall. And that, to this day, is probably the most profitable James Bond film, too, because it was a movie that had an established director that loved the source material and brought a unique sense of production to it and created a movie that made over $1 billion. So it's something that you can make a giant budget movie and make it very well made, too. And it's just as long as you have a love for the source material and have a unique vision yourself and realize that there is a certain level of honesty you have to give to the source material, because you realize you're not just... Because if you betray that, you betray the fans, and the fans will turn on you, because the internet is... It's definitely something that if you betray one fan, you betray the community. But, and the other thing, too, is... While there's been this sense of disconnect in movies and the Comic-Con world, the thing is apparently the saving grace of all this has been television. Like apparently, like, the Flash has been doing really good, Arrow's been doing fantastic, Gotham, for all of its faults, is actually still a unique vision for the story. You have Daredevil, which is doing incredible on Netflix, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I mean, apparently that's been the saving grace for DC.
Yeah, it's
has been TV.
And since you brought that up, here, Inkbauer here, you've got some information for us there on television and upcoming.
Yep. So basically, what I decided is I'm going to do, once the seasons all start, do a little every week, just kind of do like reviews or recaps or whatnot. Little tidbits of the show. What did you catch this? Did you catch that? But since none of the seasons have started yet, I was going to go through all the premieres for you so you can set your DVRs. Let's see. Fear the Walking Dead, which is the spinoff of the Walking Dead series. It's going to be based out in California and stuff. That one's going to come out August 23rd on AMC. You got Gotham, Monday, September 21st.
Woo-hoo.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
yes.
Tuesday, September 29th. And then the ones that I really enjoy, Flash, Tuesday, October 6th. Arrow, Wednesday, October 7th. Also, Supernatural.
Season 39?
Yeah, I think so.
39. Oh, jeez.
Wednesday, October 7th. The new Supergirl comes out the 26th.
Which I actually... Very interesting.
Did you watch the first
episode? I saw that 6-minute preview, and
no,
actually got me excited.
The whole episode. Did you see it?
There's a whole episode. No, I'm going to wait for the pilot. I'll wait for it to air on TV.
That is the pilot.
I know. I'll wait for them to air on TV.
I saw the trailer. It looked interesting. I saw the pilot. It was good. The whole thing, yeah. Interesting.
There needs to be a good female superhero. That's all I'll have to say, because we have been given nothing but crap in every female superhero. There needs to be someone that does her justice, and this... The trailers looked like they could actually do that.
Christina, Hendrickson as Wonder Woman would have done that. I'm telling you now.
I'm telling you.
Those boobs and that outfit. Oh, my God.
There would need to be individual boots for men to see that.
Oh, man. I was so disappointed. I was like, why? Oh, why? All
right. And then going back to the rest of the mirrors.
I'm going to go back to Christina.
The rest of them don't really have dates yet, per se, or they're really far out. The Walking Dead just says coming in October. Agent Carter, Marvel's Agent Carter, That one's the fall break fill in for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. DC's Legends of Tomorrow. That one looks semi decent. It says 2016, so my guess is it'll come after the break. And then one I know a lot of people are excited to see is X-Files. Comes back Sunday, January 24th on Fox. So that should be pretty good.
It better be. I don't need another I Want to Believe.
You know, it's still We Believe.
I Want a Career.
Yeah. X-Files, I Want a Career. David Duchovny said, he was talking about it, he's like, this is the longest TV show where the guy never solves a single problem.
I just want to know if he ever gets it on with Scully.
Of course he did.
I saw that. Yeah, but they didn't really. I mean, they kind of.
While we're talking about TV premieres, I'll throw this one out there as well. If you didn't see this. But the minute and a half trailer preview for season 9 of Doctor Who. If you're a fan of Doctor Who, season 9 preview is actually really, really good. I got to give credit to the BBC because the transition from David Tennant to Matt Smith to Peter Capaldi has actually been really well.
Don't forget Christopher Eccleston. Season one.
He was in season one, but you know a lot of folks are affiliated with David Tennant. I know there are the Christopher Eggleston fans out there, so no offense to the Doctor Who fans. I would throw that out there.
All the singles and tens of Christopher Eggleston fans that are out there.
Yeah, but September 19th for Doctor Who season 9 of the newer version.
I will be setting my DVR for that one. I am a...
That thing has a real cult following. It's even... Disney XD picked it up. They've got it on Disney XD now. I'm not kidding. And they're showing it to the younger viewers. So I thought maybe Disney bought them or something, but apparently not. They just picked it up.
Hell no. Britain knows not to give too many imports out after, I think, a couple hundred years ago they stopped doing that.
Okay, but anyway, that's why all the bad guys are British. Especially in Star Wars.
Except for Sherlock.
Now, I will say about these TV shows, at Mr. Eggenbauer's encouragement, I did sit down and I watched an episode of The Flash. It was episode 17, which was the one I wanted to see, which was the one with Mark Hamill in it for my Star Wars connection, but... It was.
Did you say
it was
flesh or flash?
Flash.
It sounded like you said flesh.
No. That would be the gay porn version. No.
No, you're thinking of Flesh Gordon, the porno that was inspired by.
It was over really quick. It finished fast.
It's a quick touchdown.
That's what she said.
But yeah, I was really, I thought it was a really well done show. I actually might check out some more. I kind of cheated, went on YouTube, and I kind of found out some more things that I probably shouldn't have seen without watching the episodes. But it seems like it's very well written to me.
Which again, TV has become the saving grace of DC.
Where Marvel has the movie universe,
DC
has
the
television.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny is that I wonder if their DC is going to hit a different generation, because right now you're with all these TV shows on, and it's easy access for people who don't have a lot of money, so that when DC Comics goes, you know, mainstream like movies, I wonder if a lot of those kids who were in the 14, 15 age range when all these shows started,
the Smallvilles,
going to have the new jobs to go see the new movie and come out in droves to see it. Like, I remember when that was on TV, you know,
and
I remember when Smallville was, you know.
I think that's kind of what helped the DC television shows. The fact that, I think that's another point I wanted to make about the DC comics is they take themselves so unnecessarily serious with their storylines. Like, they think that they're actually writing new scriptures for Bibles when they write out their hero storylines, and it becomes so dense and so uninteresting. That was another.
I'll throw this out there, because you're talking about them being so serious about writing storylines, and I remember this is going back to the late 90s, maybe early 2000s. I remember there was a huge uprising. I don't know if you would call it an uprising or not, about the death of Superman. And in the comic books, Superman died, and there was a lot of people, a lot of fans that were upset about the movie or upset about the comic book, and so much to the point that we had two different versions of Superman. If I remember correctly, I think there were two different versions.
There was four.
Okay.
There was four, and they actually had a that was a storyline I followed, and that was, and again, that was the thing with the 90s was, the 90s is actually where it began, where they thought that if you took a story dark that you would get people to be interested in it. And again, that's, you got Frank Miller back in like the mid 80s creating The Dark Knight Returns, and you had Tim Burton create the giant neo-noir gothic Batman version. And then you said, oh, hey, the first one was so great, let's see you make a second one. Oh, you made basically a noir wet dream with your second. We don't want you for part three. So that's why we ended up with the light show laser dance of the last three and four.
But, yeah, I think Marvel did the same thing, too, if I remember correctly, because I think that they wound up right around the time when Superman, the whole thing was Superman dying, I think Marvel went to what they called their ash can version, which was basically them starting their comic book universe at zero, or something along those lines, if I remember correctly.
That was around the time I was reading like all the X-Men comics. They started a new one, but it wasn't any different. I mean, they didn't start any different storyline because they actually still connected them to all their universes back from the 80s and 70s and 60s because they still kept the storylines from Days of Future Past, and they kept them all from everything from the Infinity Stone to just you name it, they still kept everything. I mean, even though they still started, hey, we're having like a standalone X-Men comic book, which I still have fond memories of reading on the school bus, those first three issues with the collectible, you know, fold-out cover of X-Men 1 from 92. You had that one where it was like the four panels.
Yeah, and I opened up, I'm like, this is so cool.
It's so epic.
And it came in its own little like plastic carrier.
Yep. You thought, oh, this is how I'm going to pay off my student loans with all these comic books.
Exactly.
No.
Yeah. Because they shipped a billion.
But the one thing that they didn't do is Marvel never went that dark that DC started going, and that they started following Frank Miller's storylines. And if anyone followed the career of Frank Miller, that's a guy that you don't really want to follow, because
he went so dark they had to go to the New 52.
There's a problem all of your own.
Just
right
to come
there.
Out of the darkness.
No, the New 52 started a new era of darkness, and it was so bad. I mean, that was just taking every storyline they had and just completely crapping on it, because if you saw what they did to Teen Titans, they don't even have their costumes. They basically have Tron Legacy outfits.
Teen Titans, the cartoon?
The comics. But, I mean, like, they started this whole
which version,
harvest.
The cool version or the crappy kid version?
You know what? I'll say this about the crappy kid version. There's more enjoyment in that crappy kid version than all of the DC universe. There's more fun to be had in that cartoon.
And they poke fun anything else in DC right now. They poke fun at so much stuff. It's so funny.
Right.
Like the episode where they try to be serious.
Oh, that's an episode I love because it's flat out.
Be serious.
It's like, I have such a dark backstory.
And that was the one where they actually pulled in the other team. Like,
right. And they gave them all, like, you know, the Rob Liefeld jaws and everything.
It was so funny.
It's like, that's why I love Teen Titans Go, is because it's so much fun. You can look at it, it's like, oh, it's not as serious as DC, but if you think about it, DC, when they try to be serious, it's like watching a 12-year-old goth kid.
I don't know. I mean, I thought the Green Lantern cartoon series, which was more serious, I thought was pretty damn good, and then they pulled the plug out.
Yeah. The cartoons, everything that was going on with the cartoons, the Batman, Superman, the Justice League, Justice League Unlimited, Green Lantern, everything there.
Even Young Justice was good.
Even Young Justice was perfect. Everything there was perfect. And DC, what they've been doing is they've been trying to keep things dark. I mean, they wanted to say, Doomsday killed Superman. Bane broke Batman's back. I mean, this is how we need to have all of our heroes. We need to have them broken and defeated. And it's like, yeah, it's their flaw. It's like, no, that's the thing with DC. That's what separates the DC Marvel heroes from the Marvel heroes. Marvel heroes are identifiable because they're human, whereas DC heroes are an ideal. They're meant to be looked up to. And that's why no writer has ever, since 1978, has been able to do Superman well, is because they've been trying to make him relatable and understandable. You don't do that to Superman. That's not the point of Superman. Superman is an ideal, and no one has gotten that right once.
To throw in some points on what you're talking about here, and I think this is what we're going to see the difference between DC and Marvel movies, because Marvel movies, as they've been done, you know, with Guardians of the Galaxy, Avengers, Iron Man, the movies are more on a level that everybody can associate with, because you've introduced these quote unquote mutants to the human race. And I think that's what's going to make Marvel Universe movies different than what we see in the upcoming DC movies, because these DC movies are going to be so dark that they're not going to be accessible to the younger kids. I mean, do you see what I'm saying? Because I think it's going to be more of these. It's going to be DC's universe is going to be so dark, and what we've even seen in the trailers so far, not necessarily noir, but it's just going to be on a level that younger kids are just not going to be able to comprehend, like what they are with Marvel.
I think you can find a balance, though Birch. I mean, Brian B. Sorry, I think you can find a real balance there, though, because I think there is definitely an audience for. It's yet to be proven, but I think there's an audience for the adult, darker version, or even more sarcastic version, like we're getting ready to see with the Deadpool movie come out.
Well,
and I think there's a real audience out there that will pay good money. I think you can have both. You can have the lighter to bring in the younger generation and the next generation.
But I think
the older folks who are still fans that want a little bit more substance.
Well, there is. I mean, that's what I think.
Here's where I think it's going to be. Yeah, well, here's what I'm going to say is the fact that with the DC universe, these movies are going to be more accessible to your older audience. That's like, you know, say 17 to 25 age range. Whereas with a lot of the Marvel stuff, it's been you take that age range and move it back just maybe a couple of years.
You know
13
why?
To 18.
That is because it's Disney. They're Disney based. Disney knows that the kids make movies.
And on top of that, the thing
that's
what
it is.
Guardians of the Galaxy, I mean, that's a pretty heavy story too. I mean, if you look at like the opening 5 minutes of that movie, I mean that's some pretty dark and heavy stuff there.
But that's fine to balance though too, because it's a lighthearted movie, it has comedy in it, and
there's some very
I'm not gonna take my 5-year-old to see it, but
no,
I you know, when she turned to see Guardians.
Yeah.
She gets 8, 10.
But,
yeah.
And as far as the balance goes, I think we had the absolute perfect balance with The Dark Knight in 2008. And I can go to that because I think it was like the fourth time I went to see it in the theater, and it was still a crowded theater. I remember, of course, it's a 2.5-hour movie, so when it was over, I had to go to the bathroom. I was in the bathroom, and I remember actually listening to a father talking to his 7-year-old son about the complexities of right and wrong, about why someone had to pretend to be the bad guy so that justice could be held. And it's just like these are questions that an 8-year-old is asking a father. And it's, you have a mature audience giving this wisdom, this balance. And that's why I think The Dark Knight is one of the most perfect movies ever made, because it captures both of those mindsets.
Yeah. I can't argue with that. And I think you've got, The ones who love, the ones that put the passion in, and I think you're definitely seeing the passion back on the small screen, getting back to TV. I've watched 4 episodes of Daredevil now, and I've loved every last one of them. And there's not much of a budget. There's not much in the way of special effects.
But there's
some serious story going on there.
Oh yeah, there's. I haven't seen it, but I have heard a lot of stories about one of the episodes actually has a fight scene that is references Old Boy, which is this 2003 Chinese film. And there's this incredible one take sequence. It's simply like a wide side shot that pans across, and it's an unbroken take of one guy in a hallway fighting about 30 guys in a hallway,
mm-hmm.
and it's done in Daredevil. I'm like,
yeah, this.
This guy has seen Daredevil. This exactly. guy has seen Old Boy. So clearly, anybody that's done this has done their homework as a filmmaker and knows what good filmmaking is.
Yeah, it's actually a really good scene too. It's really well done. Because I think that was the fourth episode. I think was that the last one? I think. Yeah, I think it was the third. It's either the third or the fourth episode. But yeah, the fight almost scene is amazing.
And so those that haven't seen it, do watch Old Boy at least for that scene alone.
Exactly. And speaking of Netflix, gentlemen. Rumor has it that Star Wars is coming to Netflix, and not just one, not just two, but three. Now, I don't know if we'll see three or not, because it's a rumor, and there's no fact, nothing's been confirmed by Lucasfilm, and I'll put that out there ahead of time. So, but it sounds like we're going to see three, or at least one or two, possible Star Wars series come to Netflix. Now, again, we don't know if it's animated, we don't know if it's live action. But I, for one, am pretty excited about this. This could be, you could see a spin-off series. I actually thought they were going to do more of a bounty hunter kind of thing on Netflix, because this rumor's come around before. But apparently that's going to be in the young Han Solo standalone film now. So I'm kind of trying to figure out what it might be. What do you guys think they might be up to here?
Oh, I think it's going to be the cantina where every droid knows your name.
Oh, geez.
It's just as long as we don't have to see B. Arthur hand out drinks.
No, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. La, 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 la.
You know, if you guys really want a copy of the holiday special.
No. It doesn't exist.
I have it with the riff tracks on it.
I did want to go back one step here, because Brink, you did mention, B. Willie, you mentioned some things about Deadpool, and I think on the last episode you guys had talked about it. I can't remember if I was on the last episode or the episode before last, and I wanted to throw my commentary in on some Deadpool here real quick if I have some time.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, I was. Yeah, we'll go back to Star Wars. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I thought everybody was done talking about the comics, so I moved on. But go ahead.
I think kind of as being the semi-resident Deadpool fanatic, I I've watched the trailer a couple of times, saw the teaser trailer, saw the trailer that they showed at Comic-Con. I'm sorry?
Right, self-proclaimed.
So no, I'm not saying self-proclaimed. I'm saying
I do remember, like, when I first met him back in, was it 03 or 04, like, you were a huge Deadpool fan.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I am. I started back in, you know, with the comics going back to 91 with the New Mutants series, and I'll give the makers Tim Miller, I think is the directing Deadpool, first time director, kind of a little on the fence about that, but they do have some decent source material to work from. I've watched the trailer. I've watched the teaser trailer a couple of times. I like the fact that they've worked Blind Al into the movie. They've also worked Weasel into the movie as well, which were two of Deadpool's nemesises, if you want to call them that, or maybe I guess you could say helpers. I don't know how crazy, but
little mystery reference there.
Yeah. But I think I really, if they're going to do this movie right, I mean, because one of the people that Deadpool fought against was Wolverine. Obviously, we saw a glimpse of that in the Wolverine movie in the past. It was not a very good glimpse.
It was still Ryan Reynolds.
But if you read the storyline in the comic book, it was a pretty epic battle, not like what we saw in the movie.
Well, the other person, he chopped off Deadpool's head. Yeah,
Oh, by the way, I'm sorry. Wait one second. Just because I just gave away the end of the movie, I should have played this beforehand.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Confidence is high. I repeat, confidence is high.
Flush the bombers. Get the suns in launch mode. We are at
spoiler alert.
Okay, you've all been warned.
For anyone that wants to see X-Men,
no. But one of the things that I really would like to see in this Deadpool movie, and I've not seen any kind of hint about it yet, is a mention of Black Tom Cassidy. Black Tom Cassidy was one of Deadpool's enemies, and I really would like to see some kind of mention. Now, I will say that I do have the Deadpool script. I've read the first couple of pages of it. Of course, this is a working script from 2010, so I don't know how much of that is going to end up in the new movie. But I really would like to see some kind of representation of Black Tom Cassidy in this new movie. I'm kind of collectively holding my breath because I just don't want to be set up for a letdown.
Well, they said the second one's going to have Cable in it.
Mm-hmm.
Time Traveler?
No. There's if you look into the history of Deadpool comics, there's actually, since, you know, Deadpool came from the Weapon X program along with Wolverine, was a member of X-Force for a while. There's a lot of crossing comic boundaries, I guess you could say, kind of like what Z was referencing earlier. But there's a lot of reference between Deadpool, Cable, Wolverine. There's a lot of tie-ins between a lot of those characters, and I'm hoping that with the new Deadpool film that they can tie all of those storylines in together in a really decent way. Because like I said, I'm hoping that I don't get set up for a letdown.
Well, we won't have to worry about them trying to cross over with any of the new Marvel universe, because that's another thing that we can thank Disney Marvel Legal for, is the fact that, because again, that's the X-Men franchise is also something that they don't own. They've actually told X-Men Comics they're not allowed to create any new mutants. So that everything that exists,
all right,
in X-Men
if Disney's really doing that, then Disney needs to buy back the character catalog. That's just ridiculous.
Or just let them exist in their own world. I mean, why do we have to...
If Disney wants that much control, then Disney should buy them back. It's that simple.
That's the problem.
See, and the other thing, too, that we have going on with Deadpool, this is actually going to be one of the first Marvel Universe films that's going to be R-rated. Everything else up to this point has either been PG or PG-13, and this is going to be the first Marvel Universe character movie with an R rating. Now, I don't know if that's going to hurt it or it's going to help it.
Because anybody that's read the comics knows everyone said you have to make it R.
And again,
if you look back, at the history of some of the other comics, not correlated to Marvel or DC, I remember back in the mid-90s, mid to late 90s, there was a huge deal about the comic book Spawn being made into a movie, and that was R-rated. That had David Goyer attached to it, which he was also attached to Deadpool at one point. Thank God he's not involved with that anymore, but that's a different story altogether. I just would like to see the source material for Deadpool kept to a very consistent form. And what they've done with the trailer looks like they've done it pretty much to a decent T so far, but, I mean... Like I said, I'm hoping I'm not getting myself set up for a letdown.
Well, like I said, I don't think the R rating is going to hurt it at all. I think this getting back to what I was pointing out before, that there is an adult audience out there for comic book movies, and I think this is going to prove, I think it's going to have a decent box office, and I think, this is just my prediction, I think it's going to open the door for, you know, two different brands. You'll have the blockbuster comic book, which will be for all, and then you're going to have more niche comic book movies like Deadpool or some other darker characters with more adult themes.
Like Suicide Squad,
exactly. And although I'm not too sure about Will Smith in that, but we'll get to that later. But yeah, I don't think it's going to hurt it at all. I think it's going to be just fine. So, all right. So let's get back to Star Wars on Netflix. So, again, we're looking at, they're saying as many as three. I'm thinking we're going to see maybe a animation show on Netflix.
If they get Getty Tarkowski back, I will be so happy. The guy that did the Clone Wars show. That was...
Are you talking about the original Clone Wars?
The original Clone Wars.
Yeah,
from like mid-2000s.
Like the five-minute clips, the guy
did
Samurai Jack.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yes.
Yeah.
Where is he? We need him.
I don't know if we'll get him or not, because I don't know if they like... I don't know if Disney's a big fan of his style of animation or not. I liked it. That was just neat. But I thought it worked well with Star Wars.
It was a big,
But we maybe, so I'm thinking maybe an animation series for kids of some kind, and then with some lesser known characters maybe, or maybe like I don't think we'll see like a Star Wars droids again or anything crazy like that. But I think we'll see something with a little bit of substance, but it's gonna be most. Well, maybe not Ewoks either. Although Ewoks wasn't bad. I think Ewoks, damn you. All right, but
I like you. I like Ewoks.
All you need to remember is the Hollywood special.
Anyway,
the holiday special.
Did not happen. Did not happen. Never happened. Ever. I don't know what you're talking about.
You know, I think this Christmas I will play the riff track of that for you just to enjoy.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. So anyway, but yeah, I'm thinking an animation series and a live action show. I'm still trying to get my hands around this one because I'm not sure what they're going to do because it seems like a lot of it is being tied up in the movie. So I'll put the question out to you guys. If they did a live action, what would you like to see other than the kid, droids and the kids?
I don't know. I really don't know. And I'm just like, I think I mentioned this on a previous episode of our program that, you know, with the sidebar movies that Disney's talking about doing, I really don't want to see a side movie of Boba Fett or a side movie of Han Solo. I know their backstories. I don't want to see a side movie of how IG-88 got built. I could care less.
Well, I really think.
I liked IG-88.
But you know,
leave me alone. I want to see IG-88. He needs his own movie. Damn it!
Although, you know, the more I think about it, maybe you don't have to have Boba Fett in it, but they could do more of a bounty hunter kind of series because there was talk when the live action back. Before the Disney acquisition, there was talk of a live-action Star Wars show called Star Wars Underground. You know, and that was going to be more about your smugglers, your gamblers, and your bounty hunters and whatnot. So
yeah, maybe they do it like Deep Space Nine, and it's somebody brand new that we've never seen before.
Yeah,
but they're on a planet that we know of,
that we're familiar with.
Yes,
yeah, I could see that. I wouldn't mind seeing maybe even an Obi-Wan Kenobi. Adventure on Tatooine, maybe more like a Star Wars meets a Western kind of a thing. I wouldn't,
you know, cool. If that happens, I actually would like Ewan McGregor back to that because I think he actually delivered like the most thankless performance in those in those prequels because it's one thing for an actor to play a role, but it's another one for him to have to actually emulate one of the most iconic actors of all time with Alec Guinness and at the same time come out of it both paying homage to him and creating something unique itself.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be kind of cool to actually see him, you know, see that.
Yeah, I would, I think there's a lot of possibilities. And after what they've done with Rebels, if Dave Filoni and, you know, has the time, he's the director of Rebels. If he has the time to create another series, I'll be first in line to watch it. Because he helped with the Clone Wars, the second, even the original Clone Wars, the second version of Clone Wars, as well as Rebels. He's done all of them, and I think he's done an absolute fantastic job with every last one. And I'll tell you again, boys, if you haven't seen it yet, check it out. It's worth a watch.
Mm-hmm.
Especially season 2 premiere. Outstanding. Which they already showed, because they showed it at Comic-Con, so they released it early. It's a 1-hour special. You actually get to see Darth Vader, as you've always wanted to see Darth Vader, like you saw him in Empire Strikes Back, except better, because he's in his prime. You get to see him be the badass that you always wanted him to see.
You mean we don't get to hear him whine about sand? No. About how he hates the sand.
No, there's no whining about sand. There's no. There's none of that.
He's holding me back.
There's a. Wait a minute. I gotta play this just in case. Everybody know.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Confidence is high. I repeat, confidence is high.
Flush the bombers. Get the suns in launch mode. We are at.
Spoiler alert.
There is a scene where there's a lightsaber scene between Ezra, who's the main character, and Kanan, who's kind of his mentor, Jedi, versus Darth Vader. Darth Vader actually uses the Force. He takes care of his, kind of throws his master to the side, and then he uses the Force, and he's got Ezra's lightsaber to his throat. So he's going to, if Kanan doesn't come back in and save him, he's going to use the Force with his own lightsaber to cut off his head. But it's bad. And it's a kid's show. It's still badass. I'm telling you, it is worth the time to see. So,
well, this is also, I mean, I actually just got through watching a video about how kids' stuff right now, like stuff for children, is actually better than it's ever been. Like, if you look at the stuff we grew up with in the 80s and 70s, I mean, yeah, we have like a nostalgic look at it, but a lot of that stuff wasn't as well written as we remember it.
Oh, yeah. I watched Voltron the other day. I was like, ooh.
But if you watch stuff like Steven Universe or Adventure Time or any of the shows like the Star Wars shows that you're mentioning, there is some real care and some real talent that's being poured into it. So it's some stuff that they're actually recognizing that children can, they don't just need to be talked down to, but they actually can comprehend really complex stories.
It can influence the market.
Oh, yeah.
And again, you know, and I love the idea of any kind of Star Wars content on Netflix just because you could binge watch it.
Yeah,
you can sit down. You want to spend 15 hours watching Star Wars. Well, you can watch 15 episodes, you know, 15 one-hour episodes of Star Wars. Great, you know. They release the whole season. There's no waiting. It's awesome. But I guess that's with anything, so.
Well, I just hope that if eventually when we do get Star Wars on Netflix, do we get the re-release version, or do we get like the actual version from 1977, 1980, 1983?
Well, I think they're still waiting to release that. Although they are apparently coming out, this just came out this week. They're re-releasing the original, all six of the saga, and it's going to be in apparently Blu-ray steel books. But what they haven't said yet is if it's the actual original cut or not.
I thought they said it was going to be the original cut where Han shoots first.
I prefer to go with StarWars.com, the actual article, and it's not in there anywhere. I read it like three times.
I'll just say this. If Disney releases the original and they just say it's just Star Wars, it's not Star Wars Episode 4, New Hope in the title, and we get Han shooting first, and we get, like, no ring around the Death Star when it explodes. If they release that on Blu-ray, I'm perfectly fine with whatever Disney does because they know exactly what the fans want.
And they do cater to the fans, that's for sure. They take the time, but,
yeah.
You know, they know how to make money. And that's,
except
know.
Creative.
I'll just throw this out there because, you know, I'll be the cynic of the group, but I'm just kind of cautiously optimistic because I don't want to see these movies Disney-fied. And that's my biggest fear now that Disney owns as much as they do with Lucasfilm, that you're going to wind up seeing episodes 7, 8, and 9 being Disney-fied with like the mouse ears in the cantina or the mouse ears in the sand on Mos Eisley or wherever it might be. That's my biggest fear.
The most Disney-fied... Okay. The most Disney-fied you're going to see, Brian B., is what's already out, or they're getting ready to come out with. It's just the Xfinity, Disney Xfinity. And I'm all right with that. It's cartoonish. It's all right. But they're also seeing Battlefront, which is just looks...
It does.
Pardon my French, but I'm going to use it. Fucking amazing.
It does look fucking amazing.
It's not like they're going to have a sing-along in the middle of Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've already got. I'm sure you guys have probably seen the video posted many, many times on Facebook and elsewhere. The dancing stormtroopers and Darth Vader at some of the Disney parks. It's like, really? Okay, we're gonna turn these into. Yeah. Okay.
That was even before they bought it. Number one and number two, it was just an attraction. It's a theme park attraction, and
no way in film. It was only on film because somebody filmed it and put it on YouTube, you know. And it was funny, you know. Okay, who cares? You know, I'm anxious to see what, you know. So far, they've released one thing so far, and it's been Rebels, and it's been fantastic. So I'm just curious to see where they go next with it. And I think Episode 7 is going to be phenomenal. I think the first standalone so far, with everything I've read and seen. By the way, I just posted the first pictures from it, by the way. They've started filming
Rogue One.
Thank you.
Yep.
And it looks absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's just everything I'm hearing, awesome. So
don't forget, like, the first movie that actually came out of the Marvel Cinematic Universe when they took over Marvel was Iron Man with Robert Downey Jr.
Right.
And that, to this day, is one of the greatest superhero movies ever.
Yeah. And everybody, when they released that, they're like, Marvel releases B-team, remember?
Right.
The big article and everything. So, I don't know. I think it's in good hands. We'll see. We'll see. Either you're right, Brian B., or I'm right. We'll see. Only time. Mm-hmm.
Actually, looking back here, Iron Man being released in 2008 was distributed by Paramount. This was before the Disney takeover.
Are you sure? Because I think that was actually around the time they were actually planning the Avengers initiative, which is actually what they mentioned at
yeah,
the end.
Yeah, it was produced by Marvel and distributed by Paramount.
Well,
as we're typing away here.
Yeah, we're going to find out.
So 2009, but they were planning it from the moment it was acquired in 2008. So,
okay. All right, so on that note, gentlemen, I think it is time for final thoughts. And I'll tell you what, Mr. Cynic, I'll let you have your final thought first.
Okay. wow, well, this is... I don't know if this can actually be a final thought, because there's a lot of stuff I was going to make mention of this, you know, with the... I'm sure you guys saw the information about the with the most recent things happening with the movie shootings. We had another one that happened just recently, and now my mind is going blank because where was this recent shooting at? It took place where the shooter was. It was in Nashville. And we had an incident in Lafayette, Louisiana, 2 weeks ago, which, interestingly enough, that kind of hit home a little bit with me because my best friend from high school, who now lives out in California, lived in Lafayette, Louisiana for the better part of about 10 or 15 years and actually had been to that movie theater many, many times to see movies. But we just recently had, the other day, the announcement of the shooter from... 2012, who was given life in prison. And I'm sorry, okay? 70 people were injured, 12 people lost their lives, and the best that you can do is put somebody in prison for life for shooting people in a movie theater? I'm sorry, he should have gotten the death penalty. I mean, when is it okay for people to go into a movie theater and not feel safe? And one of the things that I talked about a little bit with you guys offline... off the air was that, you know, going to the movie theater is an experience and it should be preserved as an experience. And that experience is now being threatened. We've now had three incidences now in 3 years. What is it going to come to? I mean, are we going to wind up having metal detectors in movie theaters? Are movie theaters going to wind up getting shut down because of somebody having some kind of a mental incapacity going to the movie theater and having a gun shooting people? I just think that justice has not properly been served in this case with the case of James Holmes because of one juror's... I guess you could say lack of confidence, and I really feel that this is just a play on showing how much our justice system needs to be fixed in this country, because you should not have to feel threatened going to the movie theater. Movie theater experience is just that. It's an experience that should be, you know, all of your senses. And I feel that that's being threatened now with the turn of events recently. So hopefully something can be done about that. We don't know what that will be, but hopefully something can be done to, I guess you could say, rectify this situation so that it does not continue to happen. Just completely unbelievable, completely pointless that our movie-going experience should be threatened in this kind of aspect.
Indeed, I couldn't agree with you more. Again, you know, we here at Four Midwest Guys, we our condolences go out to the victims. I agree with you on the sentencing. I don't think it sends the right message, definitely. But it is a crazy world we live in out there. Everybody, take care, buddy. Just, can we all just get along? So, but good final thoughts, sir. John, your final thought?
I feel like as long as I'm doing this podcast, I feel like I'm saying, are we going to live together? Together, are we going to live? If anyone knows that reference. But
anyway. I was going to say, I've come here to kick ass, chew bubblegum.
great thing. Anyway,
rest in peace, Roddy Piper.
Indeed,
absolutely. My final thoughts. I guess I'm excited for Deadpool. I'm excited for the next Guardians of the Galaxy, and I think we just need to go back to letting certain heroes exist in their own universe and not try to make them any different than what they are. And just we need people to understand that. Like, I think there's a lot of people that write for comics that shouldn't. Like, I think there's a reason Frank Miller's been shunned by the graphic novel community for very good reason. If anyone's ever had to read Holy Terror and realize that the man really is a racist, homophobic, xenophobic, crazy man. And that really came out in that book. And if his storyline should not be emulated or inspired. So, yeah, I guess. I don't know. I haven't really played a final thought of it, but just, there's some fun that should be had in comics, and I think we need to keep that sense of fun in them, but there is a sense of maturity, so let's find a good balance.
Here. Brian, your final thoughts, sir?
My final thoughts are just, I'm just really looking forward to the new television. You know, I really hate the way the television is, where it takes such a long hiatus, and I really wish it would last a little longer. You know, even if it ends up being, you don't have hour-long shows, you have half-hour-long shows, but it goes twice as long throughout the year. You know, maybe that's not where it needs to go, but I can't stand that gap from, you know, the end of peak, you know, all the way to fall.
You're missing Game of Thrones too much.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just crazy. Absolutely crazy that, you know, we have to wait so long in between these television shows. You know, it'd be one thing if you went on hiatus because, like X-Files did, you know, they're making a movie, right?
Well, yeah, they did that between their seasons, because they're building up to this 5-season movie.
Right, exactly. But, you know, but on TV shows like Flash and Arrow and stuff like that, they do all these great episodes, and they do the cliffhanger, right? And then they make you wait all these months before it comes back out again.
At least they don't do what HBO does to them.
True.
Well, you have to keep in mind, too, Inkabauer, is that in TV world, you have your May sweeps and you have your November sweeps, and that's where they try to draw in a lot of viewers. Usually it's like the second or third week of May and the second or third week of November. So a lot of TV shows only run maybe 20 to 24 episodes in a full season. So you'll have these shows premiere in the fall, and they'll build up, they'll build you up on the first 10 or 12 episodes. Then they'll have that season finale that'll be in May, and then they'll you know, take a month or two off, hiatus wise. Then they go back into pre-production and bring you back in on the fall with starting in September. So but it's just something to keep in mind. I mean, you know, that's why they do that. They have that those 2 months out of the year where they need to kind of build you up and put you on a cliffhanger kind of thing, and then make you wonder what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think it's just, I think to Brian's point, as the fan, from the fan point of view, it is frustrating. If you really are into a show, if you really like it, the cliffhanger, and we all know that everybody needs a break and all that, but it is what it is, and I understand his frustration, but I can agree with you, sir. And finally, my final one. Star Wars on Netflix. Could not be happier, could not be more excited. It's like a kid at Christmas, and Christmas never gets here, though. I am ready for Star Wars Episode 7. I can't wait for that. I can't wait for 1. I can't wait for Rebels to premiere in September. I am ecstatic. It is there is no better time on the planet to be a Star Wars fan than right now, in my opinion. It is. There's so many presents to open, so much to enjoy, so much. And Battlefront's coming out in November. I really think I'm going to have to buy a PS4 and actually buy a game. For the first time since I was 14 or 14 last time on a game system, I'm going to buy a game system. Because it's time for some Star Wars, boys. I'm ready to start opening my presents. So, and unlike back in the day when all we got was a card that said, we will send you your box set in a few short months, this time I'm going to open the presents. So, anyway, with that in mind, I think it's been a successful show, gentlemen. A little bit long this time, but that's all right. So, I had a lot to say. Been a good show. Brian B., good having you on the show, sir, as always. Hopefully we get us all in the same room next time. But, hey, this is the first time for four Midwest guys. John Z., thanks for joining us, sir. Appreciate
Absolutely,
it.
Absolutely, always.
And Hank and Bauer, as always, thanks for being here.
Yep. Until next time,
ladies and gentlemen, may the force be with you. And what's a comic saying? We need like comics. This is kind of a comic show. What's a good comics?
Stay faithful, true believers.
There you go. The truth is out.
Stay faithful.
Till next time, love y'all. Bye.